Hey, this is Megan Rapinoe, and I'm Sue Bird. We've decided to turn our crazy IG live show into a podcast for your listening pleasure. Enjoy the show. A Touch More.
New episodes of A Touch More drop Tuesday only on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
You are listening to Fangirl Sports Network's Get My Job on Blue Wire. I am your host, Tracy Sandler, and I am very excited to be joined today by digital correspondent Jessica Kleinschmidt. Jessica is one of my favorite follows on Twitter because not only is she incredibly knowledgeable about baseball, but she's also incredibly funny. She talks about dealing with social media trolls, the litmus test she uses before sending anything out into the social media universe, her most controversial baseball hot take, and so much more. You guys are going to absolutely love this podcast. It is entertaining and inspirational, and Jessica is all around fantastic. We are brought to you by Favor Apple Cider Vinegar. And without further ado, Get My Job with Jessica Kleinschmidt. All right, Jessica, thank you so much for joining me today for Get My Job.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
Oh, absolutely. I love following you on Twitter. I love your work. So this is a big treat for me. I know many of your coworkers that I work with on the 49ers, so it's just doubly exciting, and obviously everybody has wonderful things to say about you.
Aww, that's nice.
always a good thing to hear. Right. So thank you. I think we're going to have a lot of fun today.
I agree. I'm looking forward to it too. And I am so jealous, like, that nobody, or I guess I'm not jealous that nobody gets to work with JLC and Matt Maiocco. That makes me, like, very, very excited. Like, that sucks. I get them all to myself. So.
Yeah, they are the best. They're so much fun. Matt Maiocco is like a really big mentor for me. I run so many things past him, and he's the best. And JLC also, and I have become very good friends. And when I first started on the 49ers beat, she really, like, you know, showed me the ropes and was awesome. Right. So they are two pretty awesome ones. So
agreed.
It's good stuff. But today is all about you, Jessica.
Wonderful.
So I want to just jump right in. So you obviously cover baseball. I am myself, I'm a huge, huge baseball fan. And so I get very excited by fellow baseball fans. When did that become your favorite sport?
You know, it was probably when I was 12 years old. And before that, my little brother was playing Little League. And I loved my parents because they were amazing about, you know, we'll support you no matter what you want to do. They never forced us to, you know, play sports or do instruments or do any sort of extracurricular activities. But they did want us to be active, whether it was in the community or something. Mm-hmm. I was still figuring out what I wanted to do. But we went to my little brother's Little League game. And I was sitting in the bleachers. And my dad was like, hey, can you just be a team player, literally play right field? We need, or else we forfeit. And at the age of 9, 8 years old, you don't want to teach kids about forfeiting. So they got me a jersey. I played for, I think it was the White Sox or something.
And, oh, you were Michael Jordan. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I put on a jersey and he's like, so this is how you have to warm up. I warmed up and I threw the ball and I don't know what it was, but it felt like I was being born again. So I threw the ball and I looked at my dad, who was our coach, and he was like, oh no, I created a monster. And all right. So when I was 11 years old, that's when I kind of was confused because I didn't know that there was women's sports. I just thought it was all guys. And so my dad signed me up the next year and I just got addicted. And I was actually the first girl to ever make 11, 12 All-Stars in Little League in Reno, which was Valley Providence Little League in Reno. And it was just, it was cool. And I loved, you know, like playing with the guys. My little brother and I got to be on the same team for about 3 years. And we, you know, I was the first baseman. He was the second baseman. We threw second double plays. And even if we were fighting, we would still just play great. And, you know, it was a really cool bonding moment for me and my father, who unfortunately passed away when I was 19. But it was just really cool. We had the baseball thing in common. And as time went on, of course, you know, I knew I couldn't be a professional baseball player. So I was like, well, I love to talk and I love to write. Why not try to turn this into career? And another monster was born. So it's kind of like that. But I kind of like knowing that I at least played a little bit of baseball, and I eventually played softball. But for me, I feel like the baseball roots were there. And I feel like I can never say that I played as many years as some of my colleagues who go from playing to be an analyst, but I can at least say that I tried, you know? So it just, I feel like that kind of puts me in a different mentality, a different perspective to respect the game and respect the old school stuff and especially respect the players. So it was just a girl at 11 who was forced to play in right field, and here we are now.
And here we are today. That's fantastic. Yeah. What an awesome story.
Yeah.
Did you cover baseball in high school? Did you, for your high school paper or college paper, anything like that?
Actually, no. I didn't even really, I wrote a lot of stories in school, but I just was, I don't know why. I think I just was obsessed with playing and just going to school and doing what I needed to do. And it wasn't until I wrote just a fun blog probably 7 or 8 years ago. And that kind of got discovered. And it was just me kind of just farting around and writing about the A's. And that's when I kind of got my first start. And that was just mainly just for me, just to write about. I never even thought I'd actually do it. But then once I did and realized like you can actually get a following and get people to read your work and watch your stuff and everything like that, that's kind of when that other, you know, kind of monster was born. And I got discovered and I was on this website. And that was, of course, you know, I'm sure you can relate. You didn't really care about getting paid. You just wanted to get your byline on something. And that was a really cool moment for me. And, you know, I just kept getting discovered, but it was just kind of this small little blog that turned into this career. So that's a really cool like thing to look back on.
This Fangirl Sports Network actually started as a blog as well. It started as a blog that I just one day started for the fun of it, called The Trials and Tribulations of My Love-Hate Relationships with the San Francisco 49ers.
Love it.
Which was wordy. And what was really funny is a relationship with the San Francisco 49ers. And what was really funny about it is the website was trialstribblog.com. And mm-hmm. my Twitter was at trialstribblog. And I eventually changed that to 49ers Fangirl and everything. But it was, I mean, that's really what it started with. And I loved that name. It was wordy for a blog.
Oh, yeah. Wordy's always good, though. I feel like you have a lot to say. Like, why not say? Obviously, it's different when you're thinking of SEO and headline purposes. But at the same time, like, when you don't have anybody to report to, like, go crazy. You know, like,
that's do it. I do. That's the fun part about it. And that is how Fangirl Sports Network was born. And then it became 49ers Fangirl. And then we grew from there. And here we are. So I want to highlight that. From you saying that, me saying that, just because this podcast is very much for women who want to work in sports, who do work in sports. And I want people to know that that's, you just got to start doing it. And like at the beginning, can't necessarily worry about getting paid. You just got to start.
Yeah. And you kind of like have to be a little bit like, have a humility to like don't feel bad about posting your work or creating content and pushing it out there. A, you're showing off, like you want people to read it, and that could be perspective people to hire you or just developing a fan base. But sometimes you can get the critics, which are both good and bad, right? And mm-hmm. you get a situation where you know what people want to see, and you can, you know, kind of cipher out who not necessarily genuinely wants you to be good, but what your readers want to read compared to just like the rude trolls. And that was a very quick type of lesson that I learned, but I couldn't have done that just like doing it the old fashioned way. And I'm kind of glad that I was thrown out in the water and kind of fend for myself, and I'm kind of glad I did it that way. But everybody has their own way of doing it.
And I want to talk more about trolls in a little bit, but first I want to know, so you write this piece, you start the blog, and then it grew from there. What was the next step after that?
It was, I think it was a Twitter follower who reached out to me, and he was like, hey, I have a website, but it was in October. So I had written my last, you know, obviously baseball blog of the season. And he told me, well, you could write a football article and it would be fantasy football. And of course, you know, I think I'm an amazing fantasy football player because I beat my father and my brother. So I'm like, oh yeah, I got this. Like, no problem. And it was like a top 10 tight ends to start on your team next week or something like that. And it was a really cool experience, only because, I can kind of mirror that with NBC Sports, because I don't just write about baseball every day. And mm-hmm. I'm glad I got to be able to do that, to write about, especially I think it was tight ends, and that was a really unique position to write about. And I really liked that too. And people actually listened to my advice. And then, you know, the next week they won, and then that kind of sparked something in me as well. And so I was writing for eSports for about a year, and I would kind of come and go with it. And the person who discovered me kind of developed, and he got with another website, which ended up being like a one-off of MSN Sports. And that was really cool because, you know, you eventually get your byline on MSN Sports, and that was really awesome. And then another addiction was formed, and I was freelancing, and that's when MLB.com Cut 4 reached out, which was funny because I was freelancing for about 6 months, and I was like, why am I doing this? And this was after I quit my government job, thinking I could just walk into this and it'd be fine. And I was on the phone with one of my closest friends, Melanie Newman. She just got a job being a play-by-play broadcaster for the Orioles, the first woman to ever do this.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I was on the phone with her, and I was like, hey, Melanie, like, I, you know what? I gave it 6 months. I think I'm good. I'm going to try to go back to my government job or do whatever. As I'm complaining to her about wanting to quit, Cut 4 was on the other line offering me a job, but I didn't know it. It was a New York number. I'm like, oh, cool. Another robocaller. And it was a message from the interview that I did. And he gave me his cell phone number, Ian K. And I was like, why would he give me his cell phone number if it wasn't something important? And so I called him back, and he offered me the job, and I was just elated. And that was probably my most fun job I've ever had, was at Cut 4. And that's when NBC recruited me, because they liked like how it was like different and it was fun. And they wanted to bring that to NBC Sports, which was trying to do very, very hard. But that's kind of the short version of it all, in between a lot of wine and tears and, you know, talks with Jesus, like a lot of those types of things. And, you know, a lot of self-doubt, which I feel like is the best and worst thing that you could have toward yourself. And, you know, quitting my government job was also the best and worst thing that I probably could have done at the time. But it's just, I'm very thankful for it. And I realize you have to be kind of a stupid freak of nature to pursue this industry, as I'm sure you well know. But I'm glad I did it. So that was I'm kind of like sitting here like, damn, that was a hell of a journey. So it's just kind of stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, I'd love to talk for a minute about the wine and the tears and the self-doubt, because I think that we can all relate to that. And we all feel that. During those times, what was it that kept you going on this path and saying, I'm not going to give up?
Besides the wine, you really have to find a support system, and you have to have a balanced support system. And that has to be people that do work in sports and people that don't. My best friend for almost 20 years doesn't hate baseball, but she married a Yankees fan, and that's about as good as her baseball knowledge gets. And I needed that. But she believed in me from the beginning. And she was like, you're going to do it. Even when I was struggling, when I had no cash flow or anything like that. And even my mom, like, the cool thing about her is when I complain, she's always like, I don't know why you're complaining, you're gonna be fine. And she's always been right. I've always been fine. And, you know, I have the Melanie Newmans of the world and the other friends that I've made along the way, both before and after I had my success. And I feel like those are very important too. But you really just have to like believe in yourself. And I've always had this mentality. I'm from Reno, Nevada, which is a very small town, and I'm in a small community in that town. And I've just always felt like the black sheep. And when I was younger, I hated that about myself. I wanted to be the girl who got married and had kids. And it just wasn't happening for me. Like, whether it was not finding the right guy, or I just like didn't want to be, you know, settled down or tied down. And instead of, it took me a long time to be like, well, a black sheep could also be a unicorn, you know, and a unicorn's majestic and they do their own thing and they're hard to catch, but they live their lives and they do what they need to do. And they're so different, but that's what makes them beautiful and unique. And that was what I had to remind myself. The reason why the Katie Nolans of the world and the Sarah Spains of the world are so successful is because they were the black sheep of their group, and they're authentic. And that's so important in an industry where that's not a thing, you know? And so it was kind of just me reminding myself that it's bigger than just baseball. It's bigger than just sports. It's about developing a platform and doing it for myself. Like I said, I was going to when I was 12 years old. And of course, doing it for my late father, who was a huge inspiration to me, who was great about, you know, he was an old school guy, but he wanted me to be independent and he wanted me to do it all on my own. And I'm glad that I did. And a lot of times too, it is about doing it for the haters, the people that call me awful names on the internet, or the ex-boyfriends who said I would never do anything with my life or anything like that. You do have a smidge of that. You can't do it all toward them. But at the end of the day, it's all about for me, because I'm the one who takes care of myself at the end of the day. And you really have to have a good relationship with yourself, but you can't get there overnight. It's definitely a journey, because you have to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And at the end of that tunnel is going to be you just so happy with who you are. And you're able to go to sleep knowing that you put your beautiful self out there. And that has a lot to do with, you know, relationships and friendships. Because if I meet you and I'm my authentic self and you don't like me, that's none of my business. But I know that, like, I was being the true Jess Kleinschmidt, and I go to bed okay knowing that you don't like me, but it wasn't because I was fake or I was trying to please you. I was myself. And that's a really big thing too, is I wanted to do it for my authentic self and know that this is genuinely what I wanted to do. And I think that ultimately is what kept me going, was knowing I'm strong and I have the courage, and there are people watching me and a lot of girls that are looking up to me, and I can do that. I could do good by them, but I have to do good by myself.
And I think that's such important. I'm so glad you said that, because that is such important advice in life and in career. You have to be your authentic self. You can't be the next so-and-so. You've got to be you, because otherwise it just doesn't work. And if you're comfortable with yourself, if you're confident in yourself, and if you know that you are being authentic and behaving in a way that's appropriate to you, the rest of it you just can't control.
And I think about that too, like the people that I'm attracted to, whether it's friendships or relationships, I love people that are just like, hey, this is me. And they're not cruel about it. Like, even if they're upset or they're sad or they're emotional, it's like, you know what, they're being themselves. And I love that I could be myself around them. And if you're making yourself comfortable around somebody, that's the good warm fuzzies too. And I feel like that stretches beyond the career. And I feel like if you can do that in all aspects of your life, like, so many good things are going to come to you.
Could not agree more. I'm really glad you said that. And I think that leads me into the conversation about social media trolls. You handle them beautifully. I mean, you really do. It's just incredible the way you do that. And it's something I've always admired about following you. How do you do that? What tips would you have for someone, especially you, a young woman who is going to be in this industry? And listen, social media is part of it. It's just the world we live in, and there will be some horrible people. The first time someone called me trash on Twitter, I was like, I made it. This is officially made it. But it's still, those kinds of things aren't easy to hear. So what are some tips you would have, and where did you really, you know, get the ability to handle it so well?
The first tip I have is, if you're upset, that's okay. And I hate when the 9-to-5ers who don't work in social media say, you need to grow a thick skin. My skin, along with the rest of my body, is extremely thick. I know what it's like to have thick skin. And so I talked to Julie DeCaro, and she's from Chicago, a really wonderful radio host and sportswoman. She told me, like, it's okay to cry and be upset, and especially if it's complete strangers. And you have to know, like, what your limits are. And, you know, luckily for me, I have such an amazing support system at NBC Sports. And I've been threatened, and I've had, like, really scary people that have come in contact with me. And you have to know when to ask for help, because if they threaten you, that's one thing. That's something completely different. And there's a group of A's fans who were actually quite awful toward me. And a lot of them, you know, I was harassed by them physically. I was physically pushed at the AL wildcard game last year, and nobody witnessed it, so I couldn't really do anything. Yeah, and it's the same people. The same people that, like, are rude to me on social media. And so it's you have to know that you need to be protected. So that means, you know, talking to somebody, because Twitter is cool about suspending an account, but that is not going to make them not create another account. So you have to go to, like, HR and your people, and NBC's been kind of amazing about that. On the flip side, I have gotten in trouble with certain employers who say that I should stop, because I do sometimes get out of hand, because I am a sass. I get very defensive and I get very emotional, and that's both good and bad. I genuinely care, because my brand is attached to my work, and I don't have any kids. So my brand and my work is my baby. So if you're going to bash on that, I take personal offense to that. So of course I'm going to be defensive. Usually it's if you kind of bash on yourself without self-deprecating too much, that's a good thing too, because you can kind of laugh at the troll, and sometimes they just want your attention. So it's not too bad to kind of go from that. Most of the time what I do is you do have to ignore them. And that's a thing that I honestly just recently got into, because I just don't have the energy. And I'm all about the positive poppies and stuff lately. If somebody's going to be negative, you know, whatever. But you also have to stand up for yourself in certain aspects. I got called, I was told, because I got a report from a source the other day saying that when baseball would start, and I agreed with Trevor Plouffe, who's a former A's player, now he's a part of the media, and I agreed with his timeline about when baseball would return. And so I said, for what it's worth, I heard the same timeline. This troll out of nowhere said, oh, who did you sleep with to get wrong information? Turns out my information was true, because if you look at the reports, that's what they're working on. Mm-hmm. So they would never actually back up the statement saying, oh, shoot, you're right. And so that's a little bit different. I get a little scared because I don't want people thinking like I genuinely go out and sleep with people for my job, because that's already a bad thing that women have to deal with. And, you know, I put a lot of, I guess, energy into what I look like, and I don't want to just show up kind of looking schleppy. I want to look cute when I go to games, and that's just because I want to feel pretty about myself. That has nothing to do with showing up and doing it for anybody else but myself. And I just don't want that perception to be in me, because the moment somebody puts that online, Joe Schmo, whoever it is, could read it and get whatever. And that happens a lot. Like, somebody would say, like, if I'm writing about Joey Votto, they'd be like, oh, she has a crush on Joey Votto. And somebody would twist that and say, oh, Jessica's sleeping with Joey Votto. And somebody would respond saying, well, it doesn't matter that she's doing that, I just like the article. So that person, that's three people that think I'm sleeping with Joey Votto. And this happens all the time. So you have to, you know, be true to who you are. And I need to like press that into people's minds, because I struggle with that myself. You know, it's not true. And, mm-hmm. but you do have to let the people in your life know. And that means managers, that means friends, that means your bosses, that means corporate, that means HR. They need to know something's going on. Luckily, my HR people know, because both I have been harassed and I have been a little bit too mouthy. So you do have to be careful with that, but you can have some fun with it too. Sometimes it's just like literally they're trying to mansplain you, but you've already, or just say, read the damn article. I wrote what you're mansplaining to me in the damn article. Like, just read it, you know, and have fun with that. But, you know, also don't take any crap, because we're all in this together type of deal. But it's just not fair, because I hate when you're told constantly to ignore it. But I hate when you're told you need to stand up for yourself. You got to find a balance. And if you are in a bad mood, stay the F off Twitter, because it's just going to ruin it. And it's so easy to say, but, you know, and sometimes what I'll do is I'll like tweet my friends, like, this is what I want to say to this guy, but I know it's going to get me fired. So I'll just mm-hmm. text it to you, and you get it out of your system. Or I will sometimes just tweet, and you can search. I'll sometimes just tweet no comment, and that gets the Twitter kind of addiction out, and mm-hmm. I didn't get myself in trouble, and it's good. So I didn't say anything, and that won't get me in trouble, because I literally wrote no comment. So there it is.
I do the texting to friends frequently.
It's very therapeutic. Unfortunately, we're addicted to social media, right? It just is what it is.
Totally. Like, this is what I want to tweet, but I'm not going to. But now you, at least you know it. Exactly. At least you know it's funny. So I totally get that. But that's horrible that you were physically harassed. I mean, honestly, the social media harassment is also terrible, but the physical harassment is awful. And I'm sorry you went through that. And were there any channels to do anything about it? Or you said no one saw it, so you weren't able to?
I told the right amount of people, but it wasn't, you know, I was being just typical Jess, where I just wanted to get a story done. Like, I was so in the moment, I was like, cool, I got pushed. But like, and he was also like, just like talking crap. And it was just, I should have been more proactive about it, but I wasn't. And it didn't scare me enough to where I thought I needed to say anything. But it was kind of weird, because he was like literally holding his child when he did it. And it's just, weird stuff. But, and it's also kind of painted like a bad taste in my mouth for certain fan bases. And that kind of sucks too. Like, but I mean, it just is what it is. But the right people knew, and they knew what happened. But they were aware of it. Of course, nobody saw it, so they couldn't, like, and that's just how it is, right? But there's been situations where, even if nobody saw anything, I've had amazing support systems where they've been like, we believe you. And that's just phenomenal to hear as a woman in the industry, where a guy would send me inappropriate messages who's a front office member, and I would tell somebody, and they didn't even have to say, well, what were you doing? Or they were just like, we believe you and we'll take care of it. And that was just a phenomenal thing to happen to me too. So there are good things that come out of, you know, putting like complaining and putting reports out there too.
And there are good people. And I think that's, you know, I think most people are good. And I think in our industry, there are a lot of really good people. And so for every bad instance. There are a lot of good ones. And so I think that gives us hope, because otherwise it would be like hard, you know, to keep, yeah, keep going through it. But I think for the most part, you know, there are a lot of good people, and it's good to know that there are good people that support you. And, you know, just as much as I want, there's a question I hope eventually women never get asked, which is, how did you become a sports fan? Because no one asks a man that. I also would like women never, ever again to get asked, well, what did you do?
Yeah.
And those are, you know, the latter probably being much more important. But, you know, thank you for sharing that story with us, because I also think it's important to know these things and know they happen and be on alert and, you know, be aware and know how to handle them, and you handle them well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Before we move on, we are going to quickly take a break to hear from our sponsor. They say a healthy gut means a healthy you. Favor apple cider vinegar shots bottle this feeling into the convenience of a 2-ounce shot. Better digestion, stronger immune system, and the lowering of blood sugar levels are just some of the benefits to shooting a daily Favor shot. Their proprietary blends are raw and organic and mixed with other functional ingredients to create a better tasting experience. First-time shooters can go to drinkafavor.com. All right, Jess. So kind of going a little bit along the line of what we talked about before the break, I was going to ask you a misstep you see women making when trying to break into the sports industry, and it could very well be related to what we just talked about, or it could be something else entirely.
Okay.
So your choice. Guest choice. Is there a misstep that you see, whether it be dealing with social media trolls or with inappropriate situations in the field, or just generally women coming up in the sports industry? And honestly, it may not just be women. It could be people coming into the sports industry.
I feel like social media could play a part. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's not, I think that's everybody. So say for instance, like if I didn't work for a corporate or place like NBC Sports, my Twitter might be different. You know what I mean? And I'd be a little bit more free and stuff like that. But I think a mixture of where I work for, who I work for, I'm actually glad I work for a place that I have to be careful, because it's just, it keeps me off social media a lot more. But I also feel like the missteps that happen are sometimes aren't missteps until you've created them. And that's mistakes, right? You know, that's why I have a lot of young women that look up to me, is I can give them advice because I've effed up so many times. And I didn't think that they were F-ups until it was kind of sometimes too late. But also sports media and the different ways that we're, I guess, creating things, it's so new to people that we're allowed to get away with things a little bit more controversial, which I think is kind of beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that's good, but it's also like, because we can express ourselves, but there are lines. Like even just from like me personally, like I do like to keep a lot of my personal life as private as possible, just because eventually I want to have a husband and kids. I don't want them, you know, getting any involved. Like all my nephew and niece's photos, I make sure that's on a private account, because I would hate for somebody to recognize them out in public. And I'm not saying I'm a big public thing, but it's, you know, people are weird on social media and people track down phone numbers on social media and stuff. So I think missteps are both avoidable, but very important too. So I feel like it's only a difficult question to answer, because I'm very thankful for the F-ups and missteps that I've done.
Well, that's fair. And I think, you know, one thing we talk about a lot on here and generally is, of course, you learn from your failures. And those missteps sometimes do. You hope that you don't make a misstep that really adversely affects your life, your career. I don't think you ever would. But I think it is important to be okay with that. And I think that's an important piece of advice in itself. Like, it is okay to mess up. You're not going to be perfect all the time. You're not going to get it perfect all the time. And it's okay. The world will not come crashing down, and you will make it through.
Yeah. And I feel with social media lately, it's more or less like, I feel like and I'm still trying to figure it out because, you know, I'm very protective of my personal relationships. I want to have a certain thing, like if I would never tweet this to my grandmother or text it to my grandmother or send a photo of this to my grandmother, probably shouldn't go on social media. And
that's an excellent litmus test.
Yeah. And I don't know, because my grandma, I feel like, and maybe my grandma's not the right, because my mother would be like, whatever, like she's so chill and like down with everything. But so maybe something like that, or your father, or just think about like the most proper person who gets offended very easily in your life. Maybe have them in the back of your head every now and then. Like, would they be okay with this? Probably not. Or even just like your work. Would you ever send this to your boss? Think about that.
Yeah, think about that. I think that's a great litmus test. And I think maybe you kind of just answered the question. I mean, really, like that's just a good litmus test for anybody, especially with social media. Like you want, because you can delete it, but it's still out there.
Yeah. And if it's one thing I know, it's like I push the buttons. I really push the buttons. And knowing that I'm like a little bit nervous to send things, what's that telling you? You know, like usually I just don't care. I just fire away. But I'm kind of glad in the last year I've had a lot of restraint. Because girl, if I didn't, Lord knows.
Lord knows. So it's good. And it's good to know the boundaries on that one as well. I think that's important. But along those lines, you're very funny. And it works. Oh, you're welcome. And it really works well in your sports coverage. Is that something you fine tuned? Was that something that you were like, oh, I'm funny and I know a lot about sports and I can combine these two things?
I think I'm more funny than I'm more sports. And it's funny because I was thinking about that today. Like, it's so difficult to find that balance. And I want to say, because people come to me for advice or analysis or obviously news. And for me, who's such a smart ass, it's so difficult for me to find that balance. But that was just me kind of training myself. And that's, you know, it depends on if it's a podcast like this, I can be a little bit of both, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the same time, though, I don't want to be too reporty where I'm like, ew, this does not sound like Jess. Like, what are you doing? You know, you want to be Jess. And even in my writing, like I want to be funny and real, and I want somebody to read it. If they didn't see my byline, I wanted them to be like, oh, I'm pretty sure Jess wrote this. Cause at the end of the day, like I want it to be like you and I are like out having a couple beers, couple glasses of wine. And we're talking about, we're having like a really fun kind of intelligent, sexy conversation about sports. So I can be quirky and funny, but I want you to leave like learning something, or I taught you something. So it's more about just like kind of being authentic and, you know, shoving a few little dad jokes in there, or being like kind of my sass self. But also maybe I'll throw like a slash line in there, or tell you this really funny story that I talked about when I interviewed Chris Davis or anything like that. So it's kind of being yourself with, you know, making sure there's a balance there. But it's really hard to get there because it's no different. Like when I tweet something out and I'm being a smart ass and I get, and sometimes I'm like, well, of course they're going to mansplain me. I look like an idiot. Like, you know, like people don't actually, like, of course I know how MLB is spelled. Like, I know that. But it's like, you know, just stuff like that. And you have to kind of have an open mind with that. Not everybody's going to get it. And you can be open with them too. Be like, I'm so sorry. I was trying to be funny. And I don't think the send off was right. I shouldn't have said it that way. And also, I'm a very firm believer in bringing out like maybe some italics to make tweets a little bit more sarcastic looking, because people are crazy. So it's just kind of like that. But I definitely like the idea of being funny before I like sports, because I feel like you can do a lot more with that. Because I like the personality part where they maybe don't care about the sports as much as they just want to hang out with me for a few minutes. You know what I mean? So I think that's kind of cool too. So it's hard to find a balance, but you eventually do.
Just a side note, when bars are open again, let's go and have a couple glasses of wine and have a really funny conversation about sports.
I love it. I am so down. Yes.
Add that in. I had a couple weeks ago during The Last Dance, I was so proud of myself because I know I'm funny in life, but I don't think I'm always funny on Twitter, and that's okay. Like, but I'm funny on Instagram. So I've got like, now it sounds like I have like seven, you know, all my little social media personalities, but, It's very funny. So a couple weeks ago during The Last Dance, when there was that line where you can show me whatever you want, but I'm you're never going to convince me he wasn't an asshole. Yeah. I had this moment where I was like, oh my God, I have something so funny. I tweeted it and said how I feel about all my exes or most of my exes. Yeah. And it got such good response. And I was like, I had my funny Twitter moment. I was so proud of myself.
It's because you didn't overthink it. It was just a natural thing. And it was relatable. And people are like, you know what? She's right. Because same. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, totally. What was funny is that I posted that on Instagram and one of the said exes liked it.
I was like, well, that's so satisfying. I love that. Oh yeah. My gosh, that's good. That was good.
Sorry, that was an aside. This is not about me. This is about you. But I just felt
you. No, I'm so glad you shared that story. That's phenomenal.
So I would like to know a couple current event things before we, you know, move into some of the other questions I have. First of all, how confident are you that there will be a baseball season? I did see your comments the other day, but would just love to know how confident you are.
I got to be honest, I'm extremely confident, and I wasn't confident probably until about 3 or 4 weeks ago. At the beginning, I was like, "Hell no, this is not going to happen." And I guess my worry is they're going to like kind of get it started, and they're going to be like, "No, probably not a good idea." But I really, I'm pretty confident in just MLB and figuring stuff out, but I have the players' backs no matter what. I'm going to stand with them. If they don't feel comfortable, I will not take offense to that. I'm not going to be a member of the media who is like, oh, you have to do that or else we're not going to have anything to write about. I'll figure it out. I'll be okay. But also like work with me so we can do some more Zoom interviews because I would love that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. We can work together and figure it out. But at the end of the day, I'm actually really, really confident. And that's weird, but I feel like they're making strides and I don't know what it is, but I really think it's going to happen. And even some of the players that I've spoken to, I mean, they're told to like just stay in shape no matter what, but they're actually being told be ready for that end of June, beginning of July date. And that's not breaking news necessarily. Gabe Kapler was very open about that. He's telling his same age as Gabe. Like, come on, like they're the same. He's telling his players to stay in shape too. So I'm hopeful only because like I'm so in love with the sport and just how I am at the field and everything like that. And I'm okay with the adjustments too. If I don't get to go to a baseball field at all this season, I'm okay with that as well. And that's going to be a fun adjustment for me. And I get to teach myself new ways and I'm hopeful. I really, really am. And I think MLB is making good strides to make sure that happens.
That does make me happy because I have to say that I 100% have the players' backs and get it 100%. But my little heart would break if I never get to see Mookie Betts in a Dodgers uniform playing. I would be so sad. And it's okay that I won't get to see him live because that probably isn't going to happen. Right. But I am a big Dodgers fan.
Okay.
Yes, I am. I'm actually.
Do you openly go around the Bay Area saying that?
Well, so I actually, you may not know this about me, I'm based in Los Angeles. I am from here. I am from Los Angeles and I am in the Bay Area very frequently, obviously. Occupational hazard because I cover the San Francisco 49ers. Right. But I'm based in Los Angeles and my grandparents got season tickets to the Dodgers when the Dodgers moved here.
I love the Dodgers. Obviously, I can't go around the Bay Area saying that, but I just love them. It's just like everything about them. I'm hopefully crossing my fingers. I have an interview with Oral Hershiser coming up soon, and I'm like hoping that actually happens, but we'll see. I was on a phone conference call with Vin Scully, and I bawled my eyes out. It was when he was retired, and it was just a beautiful moment. I was like, oh my gosh, Tracy, I was in the middle of a Starbucks, and I was getting chills, and I was crying, and it was just, it was beautiful. It was the coolest thing, and the place I was working for doesn't even know how big of a deal that was to me. And it was life changing. It was just amazing. It's just a beautiful man just telling me stories. And I loved it.
He is an incredible, incredible man. I was lucky enough to meet him once and he's amazing. He's incredible. And I actually have a very good Matt Maiocco story for you about the Dodgers. Oh. Last fall, game 5 of the division series, which I'll try not to cry telling the story. But as we may or may not remember, the Dodgers lost to the to be world champion Nationals, which I'd rather lose to the winner. So that was fine. But I was really, really sad. And I tweeted, I know most of you hate the Dodgers, but I think most of you like me and your girl's really sad tonight. And Matt Maiocco replied to me on Twitter and said, I hate the Dodgers, but I think the world of you, Tracy, and I would never want you to be sad.
That is...
I'm honestly telling you, I'm teary thinking about it right now. It was so sweet. And since we talked about Matt Maiocco in the beginning, I just felt the need to bring that up right now.
I'm touching my chest, like, what a precious baby angel. Like, I can't.
I screenshotted it. I texted it to my dad and my brother, who were equally devastated by the situation. Well, maybe not equally devastated, but they were both. My brother definitely was, and my dad was definitely upset. And my dad said, that's one of the nicest things I've ever seen in my life. I'm tearing up.
That is the cutest thing. Like, but like, also, I'm not surprised. Like, but I'm
exactly.
Not. What a wonderful, wonderful guy. Of course.
He's the absolute best. So there's our Matt Maiocco, Vin Scully love fest. And there's that.
Oh my gosh. Matt Maiocco is kind of like the Vin Scully of like 49ers beat reporting. I said
that, it. You did. And oh my, he's going to be real excited to hear that. That is like, that's the ultimate compliment.
It really is. The Vince Scully of anything, like, all day. All day.
And he is. Matt Maiocco is the Vince Scully of 49ers beat reporting.
Really.
Well, this has literally become a Matt Maiocco appreciation podcast.
I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with that.
I am too. I think that I'm all in on that one. So I have a question for you. And it's funny because we're going from a really sweet moment to maybe it won't be as sweet a moment. But what is your most controversial baseball hot take?
The pretty obvious one that I'm very open about is I feel like, marriage proposals in the middle of a baseball game are shit. They're the absolute worst.
I agree with that assessment.
And it's weird because growing up, I thought that's what my future husband's going to do. It's so sweet. It's romantic, but A, you're interrupting the damn game. B, you're putting extra pressure on him or her. You know, I'm diverse. I'm a feminist. Do what you got to do. But to like do this in public and see, like, it's just trashy. And you want to, like, I feel like that's a slap in the face to love because you want to show strangers that you love this person and you want to kind of make a mockery of it. And that's just rude. And I just don't like that.
Rude.
And
I'm kind of just rude.
It's just like rude. I'm trying to watch the game, you know, and like, I went to one of my friends, I got her a job with the Cardinals organization. And so she invited me out to go see her. It was in Peoria, Illinois, very small town. And I was going to help them out like throughout the first pitch. And it was like a really cool thing. And later on, they told me that they were going to have me do in-game interviews, which I was like fine with. And they were going to actually do a fake proposal like in front of me while I was doing an interview. And I was like, you would have been very viral. I would have made such a stink. I would have had such a fit. And plus you see all those like fake kiss cams and stuff. And it's like, that's like a slap in the face too. I just feel like they're all fake and not real. And I love love. I know I don't come off that way, but it just to me is a big slap in the face. But I think my other big controversial hot take is a hot dog is a sandwich.
Oh, that is a big
hot. You want to kick me off the podcast now. Totally understand.
You know what? I actually don't have strong feelings. The marriage proposal, I 1000% agree with you, even though when I was a little kid, I was pretty sure Chipper Jones was going to propose to me in the middle of a game. But since he didn't and I grew up, I realized that I would not want that at all. So I totally agree with you.
Right. And that's how I was too when I was little. I was like, oh, he's going to throw out the first pitch and it's going to be on the mound. And I'm like, but you know what? Honestly, I feel like if I have the right husband, he's going to have a sick sense of humor and still do it, just knowing how much I hate it. And I'm just going to love him even more for it.
Exactly. I think that will be perfect. And then this hot dog situation, I'm going to be honest. I know people feel really strong about this. I don't have strong feelings about whether or not a hot dog is a sandwich.
I feel like it just like now, I think I like tweeted it out and it's like, I'm like whatever about it, but I've tweeted it out so many times, like I have to do it. And my boss even made me write a blog on it for 4th of July last year. And it just, probably one of my most like highest read articles I've ever written. But I think the one thing I've noticed recently is I am very pro universal DH. And I don't think people are very happy with that. But that's, because I'm romantic and I want to see Joey Votto play forever. And we got to see David Ortiz play forever. I'm not ready for Albert Pujols to say goodbye. Hunter Pence would be a really great DH, and they're probably going to implement that if there is a shortened season. And so I love it. I love a DH. Plus, I'm an AL girl, so I'm used to the DH. So I don't think it's that big of a deal.
You know, I don't think it's that big of a deal either, and maybe I'm going to get in trouble for saying that. And I also think when the World Series comes around, I mean, I guess you could say, yeah, but when you're in an NL park and the pitcher has to hit, it's a disadvantage. But I think the advantage would be better if we could have a DH. Because even a great hitting pitcher, and the great hitting pitchers of Blavid, Maddux, and Smoltz, I'm also a Braves fan, in case that wasn't clear in this podcast.
We all are. I was raised off of TBS growing up. You were all kind of Braves fans.
Yes, exactly. So even though they were the silver slugging trio there, I think it would benefit everybody. So I don't have a problem with the universal DH. I don't have a super strong
feeling about it. Being an NL team fan, because NL teams absolutely hate it. They absolutely.
I don't have that strong feeling about it. It doesn't bother me either way all that much. I really don't. I love the idea of a good hitting pitcher. I do love the idea when a pitcher like drives in a run and helps himself. Right. There's something about that I find very satisfying. But I'd also find it super satisfying if the bases were loaded and the DH came up and hit a grand slam. So. Feel like there's all kinds of things you can find.
There's a lot of give and take, because there's a lot of pitchers I talk to that don't even like the new intentional walk rule, because they think that that could be altering too. So it's just, there's always give and take, right? But I feel like the advantage is greater than the disadvantage in this case.
I agree with that as well. And as an NL girl, I may get in trouble.
You know what, girl? No, I think you I appreciate that. It's, you're different. I don't think a lot of Dodgers fans are really mean to me yesterday about this, but they did not. I was like, well, you know, but it was very interesting. A lot of Giants, because I wrote a Giants article about it, because the Giants would be one of the most beneficial teams, actually. And, no Giants fans. I mean, actually quite a few were like, okay, but most of them are like, no. And a lot of Dodgers fans were not happy with it. So good for you for standing your ground.
You know what? I will stand my ground. I'm pretty good at doing that for the most part.
I love it. Good for you.
Thank you. I have a couple more. First of all, can you tell me about your t-shirt collaboration with Home Sweet Ballpark? Because I love the t-shirt. And I want to know how that came about.
So I actually had the idea. I tweeted it out, I want to say 2 years ago, and I was obsessed with it. And it was, I usually call them pop flies, but that's not the actual term, but just like what I've been calling them since I was, 8 years old. And I've been trying to find the right people to do it. And I had one interested party, but they weren't really going to work with me as far as me getting paid. And I really liked the idea. So Home Sweet Ballpark is part of Ballpark Vibes, and they're a couple of girls that I've actually mentored, and they're just these up and coming young girls who are obsessed with baseball, and they just pump out so many articles. And, I've helped them along the way, and they started creating a t-shirt line. And so I talked to Megan Ellis, and she's the creator of all this. She's just so brilliant. And she was like, and I told her, I was like, hey, like, I have this idea. Let's talk. And as we FaceTime, she created it like it was nothing. And she stayed true to giving me a chunk of it. And I gave a chunk and I donated it to Tony La Russa's Animal Rescue Foundation. I'm really weary. Like, animals are the best thing in the world, because they won't break up with you. They won't tell you, they've met somebody else. Like, they're the loves of their lives. So I wanted to go toward them. I'm obviously open to any other charities that people want, or, I'll do whatever. But and they stayed true, and I got like the right amount that they said they were going to give me, and I was very excited. And they've been selling like hotcakes. But it's also cool because it's all woman ran, and it's young girls who are genuinely passionate about writing and blogging and learning about the sport and everything like that. So it's more than just this t-shirt, which I am very, very happy with. But it's also like, and I don't want people to think like I'm anti-love. I love love. But it's also like, hopefully you can find both, you can catch feelings and a pop fly. Because nobody or a fly ball. Like, nobody actually wants to make an error on a fly ball, because that's like the worst. The absolute worst.
It is the worst.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it kind of hits me in a bunch of different directions, but I love those girls. They're absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, they'll call me constantly asking for advice on writing or dealing with people or even, you know, BS on Twitter they're curious about. But I wanted to make sure that it was by women and strong women and independent women. And they're like my little sisters, and I'm so proud of them. And I'm really glad the way the shirt turned out. So it was very dear to my heart.
It's a great shirt. I'm gonna order one. I actually meant to order one the other day, and I don't know if this ever happens to you on social media, but I got distracted. But I'm gonna be ordering one.
I just bought like two things on from I don't even know where yesterday, and it's just like there's so many things right now, and like we have nothing but time to like buy stuff, you know. So
true. It's very true. But I'm gonna get that shirt because it's adorable, and I love it.
I really love that.
Oh, well, you're welcome. I appreciate that you made the shirt. So it's a win-win for everybody. So before we get into five fun facts, if you are open to sharing with us, I would love for you to take us on a day in the life. And it could be a day in the life right now under the current circumstances. And let's do that, because I think it's interesting for people to learn how different people are in quarantine, how they work, and all that kind of fun stuff.
Okay, so you want me to do both normal day and quarantine day?
Sure, let's do both. Or why don't you do quarantine and then tell us how it differs from your normal day?
For sure. So quarantine So quarantine is I was lucky enough because before I got with NBC, I was working from home. So for me, the adjustment wasn't too bad. And I'm very thankful for that. So my day in quarantine, I wake up, I'll work out, whether that means like I'll do a bar class online or I'll go for a run or something like that. And then I have my coffee because I love my coffee, and I'll shower and then get ready for work. And I'll put like, I try to like once or twice a week put makeup on, because I do just not necessarily like want to do it because I have Zoom calls, but I like to feel good about myself. And I work with like mainly dudes, and they don't understand that, and that's okay. But also, you know, I want to feel like I'm somewhat made up. So I'll go to my little desk, which is at the corner of my room, and I'll just work. And it's cool because I can, you know, take small breaks and cook while I bring my computer out, which is really nice, and all of that. And then I just do that. And then after work's done, I'll usually have FaceTime dates with like my girls, or, you know, check in with my family, and, maybe I'll have like a Bumble date that I'm doing or something like that. And that's a glass of wine, and I'll make myself a drink or something, and I have dinner, and that's my day. usually I'll read, and I'll do some journaling and stuff. And I'm definitely trying to find other things to do. But you know, it's quarantine, so it's difficult, but I'm trying to embrace like going on walks and stuff like that. But yeah, that's a quarantine day. And that's like completely different from my normal day, because normal days, I live out in the East Bay, so I have to ride the train into the city. And so I'm either in the office, which is the studio, and I'm working at my desk there for my 8-hour shift, and I'll take my break and I'll walk to Whole Foods. I miss those walks to Whole Foods. And I'll have, you know, my lunch. And then I miss my boys too. Like, usually when I'm working in the office, there's too much like masculine energy, so I miss my girls, but I really miss my boys these days. So it's just like I just miss hanging out with them. And so I'll do that, or if I have an A's game to cover, I'll go to the Coliseum, and I'm there 3 hours before, which I was talking about this recently. It's kind of funny that the games are often the last thing that we remember actually occurs for baseball, because we're writing, we're doing all this. So I'll get there like 3 hours early, set up. And my setup is big, because I sit on the opposite side of all like the smart people, because I like all my room, because I'm usually changing out of my tennis shoes into my heels and like getting my makeup ready. If I have a TV hit, I'll do that. And then I'll write up an article heading into it, get all my interviews done, go on the field, watch some batting practice for both teams, and do all of that stuff, and then get ready for the game. So I'll do the game. And then after that, I do post game and get my quotes, whatever I need from the pitcher and everything like that, write up, and then I'll go home and then write another article before I go to bed. And I love those, because I don't feel tired until like 11:30, maybe actually it's even later than that, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. So that's the one thing I miss the most, but I don't miss having the commute, because it just takes so much out of you. And it's BART, so it's kind of gross sometimes. But that's my favorite thing, is when I go into work, that's when I read. And, you know, I read for a living pretty much. So I don't want anything to do with books on my ride home. I'm like, I'm not reading a damn thing. I don't care how inspirational Oprah says this book is. I can't do it. So I'm just going to be listening to crappy music and maybe a podcast and stuff like that. So that's a day in the life of Jess. But yeah, it's kind of cool to figure out other things that I haven't had a chance to do during the quarantine time. So usually my life is so crazy and chaotic. I'm glad I can kind of unwind a little bit more now.
Well, keep us posted if you come up with like a new hobby or something fun that we all should try.
Oh, I definitely will.
Definitely let us know. Well, before you go, I am going to go through five fun facts with you. As you probably know, I do these with the 49ers players. And so now we do them every week on this podcast, and I ask everybody the same five questions, which has been awesome because we get five very different answers every week, which right. is great. So if you are ready, I will start.
I'm ready.
What is your favorite moment in sports?
This is like the most difficult question to answer, and that's a good thing because I've been so blessed. But I think the most recent one I'd have to say is with Dallas Braden. Dallas has become, I don't even know how to describe, like I looked up to him as a player. He threw his perfect game 10 years ago around this time, almost to the day. And I just remember watching it happen and just looking up to him, just like I said, as a player. And not only has he become a colleague, he's really become a friend of mine. And so I had an interview with him via Zoom, and I asked him about the perfect game, and he gave me just an amazing interview. And while we were done with the interview, we were just kind of talking, and I was really struggling at the beginning with quarantine, and he just talked me through it. And I was, you know, going through some depression and some anxiety, and he was just like, "You're okay, Jess." He's like, "You're so good at your job. You're doing amazing. I'm proud of you. I'm here for you." And he's just like, "I'm here if you ever just need to call me." And then not even 2 weeks later, I need another quote from him. And we did the same thing. After I was done recording, he just sat me down and was like, "Are you okay? Do you need anything?" And like, Dallas is just this bigger than like larger than life person. And so when we had our Zoom interview, there was, you could see my desk, obviously we're doing it from my room. And there was a picture of my dad on there, a baby picture of me with my dad. And I had it there since I moved into my new place about a year and a half ago. And I didn't realize that like my dad was in the shot, and it was a big moment for me because the last MLB game was one that me and my dad went to when I was younger. And I think Dallas was on that team. And it was just a cool full circle moment to know that Dallas, who's made such a big impact, not just in my career, but my life, got to kind of share a shot with my dad. And I wish they'd be able to get to know each other because Dallas has just been such a savior for me and just such a good friend to have. So that's probably my most favorite moment that I've had. And it just happened like a month ago. So that's kind of a beautiful thing.
That's incredibly beautiful, incredibly special. Thank you for sharing that with us. Sure. What is your life motto?
Just to be authentic. I think it's very simple, but it's difficult to go by. Field Yates once told me right when I got in the industry, he was just like, "You just need to be yourself." And I was like, that's your advice, Field? Like, come on, like for effing ESPN. And he was right. It was the one thing that I stayed true to. And it's the reason why I am here today. So just be authentic and true to yourself, and really amazing things will happen.
What is your go-to workout?
I'm really into bar classes right now because I can't go to the gym. They're just really fun. And I'm not like a ballet person, but like they kick your butt, man. Yep. So I'm definitely in a bar, and like I'm really enjoying my runs. But I do miss just the gym. Like I have my little go-to routine. I miss, my elliptical, and I miss the stair stepper and everything like that. But anything that'll give me a really good sweat, I'm super into.
You mentioned you love your coffee. What's your go-to coffee order?
It's usually iced coffee. I'm super into iced coffee. But except for like first thing in the morning, I need my warm cup of coffee. But if I'm at a Starbucks, it's usually going to be a vanilla chai. Or recently I became one of those asshole customers that like, but this person's like, "Really, that's your order?" And it's, like, and it's basically just an iced espresso. But there's vanilla, there's almond milk with vanilla syrup in it. And it just jacks me up.
and it just makes me so happy, and I can chug it super quickly, and it's just amazing. Yeah.
And then last, and now I think I might know the answer, so we could change it from book to podcast. We ask a book every woman should read, but maybe there's a podcast every woman should listen to, or an album every woman should listen to. We can switch.
The podcast I'm really excited to talk about. It's called Modern Love, and they made it into an Amazon, I guess, show series.
Okay.
And it's basically, it's all these essays from a New York Times column, and it's about love. So it's relationships and breakups and scary things that we all can relate to. And it's about, you know, sexuality and, you know, gender roles and everything like that, and just everything. And they, and famous people read these columns, like Jake Gyllenhaal's done it. Ooh. And like I think Kristen Bell's done it. And so they read these, and then after they're done reading them, they talk to the person who actually wrote it, the person who, the famous person who read it, and then the editor of the column. And there's just always something that you can relate to, because you read it or you listen to it, and then you want to know, like, are they still together? What's going on? And this was in the New York Times, so people want to know, like, did that person read it? The person that you wrote about and stuff like that. It's so just heartwarming. So I listen to it constantly, and it's so addicting. So that's definitely, because you can also read the actual columns. Mm-hmm. It's cool. And there's, like I said, an Amazon show series on it too. And I swear by it. It's such a beautiful podcast.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. I'm going to check that out for sure. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jess. It was really fun to have you on.
Yeah, no, this is probably one of the most fun podcasts ever done, like genuinely.
Oh, thank you. Oh, wow. You just made my whole day. Thank you very much for that. And so guys, you heard what she said. It's one of the most fun podcasts she's ever done. So if you could rate us and leave a review and say something similar, if you're feeling it, that'd be amazing. And also make sure you're following us on Instagram @FangirlSportsNetwork. And I will talk to everybody next week. Bye, y'all.